Looking for a place to eat that has a little something for everyone? Come to Route 1 Grill House in Saugus. The most mouth-watering dishes, such as their ribs, steak tips, seafood, and pizzas. Wash it down with their extensive martini list and large selection of draft beer. Route 1 Grill House has a private function room that accommodates up to 70 guests for any function. This is the spot for you and your friends as the weather gets warmer with their outdoor seating. Come on in to the family-owned Route 1 Grill House in Saugus, the perfect place to be.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hour number two here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here from the Town Fair Tire Studios. 617-779-0985. If you are calling for the tickets, you can stop on that. By the way, before we move on to more of your calls, which we'll get to here in just a second, do want to just congratulate the Bruins, Toucher and Rich, the Sports Hub, $125,000 raised yesterday as part of Pucks and Paddles.
Yeah, it was a good event. It was a good event, really well done. With some of the moves that were made, I got called out of the bullpen to play.
Oh, did you get to play yesterday?
Second round loss.
Better. Yeah. It's, you know, better than a first round exit.
It wasn't very much help to my partner, but it was a good event. It was fun.
Always. Grizz beat you? He did you in?
Grizz, yeah. Matt Grizzlick. We were able to beat Charlie Coyle in the first round, but a very close game. Or whatever it is. I don't know. But
who ended up winning?
I'll tell you what, the last match
Anton Bleed.
Anton Bleed.
The last match was a lot of fun. It was a Ryder Cup, as David Pastrnak described it. It was Pastrnak and Joakim Nordstrom against Marchand and Bergeron, and that was a good competitive match. It was close.
Nice. So yeah, $125,000 raised for Tufts Floating Hospital for Children at Tufts Medical Center and for the Bruins Foundation. So, you know, good on everybody who bid and was out there yesterday,
and the Bruins Foundation and how they it was really good, a lot of fun.
All right, let's get back to your calls. We've got Chris in Chicago up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Hey, Chris.
Guys, love your show. I have some common friends, and Jed, I'm sure you know Stan Bowman, who had mentioned to him a few weeks ago about possibly doing some deals with the Bruins, and he had mentioned something about the Bruins that was very interesting. He goes, you know, they're in cap jail. He goes, and they have their own problems, as you guys know. But that being said, they have nothing to trade, meaning that their young players, unfortunately, are not very good. So Sweeney, unfortunately, has put them in a very difficult position right now. And I think at some point here, you have to make a substantial trade, not just a periphery deal, but something which you may have to trade someone that everyone loves. They may have to leave town to get better. Just want to get your thoughts on that.
I appreciate the call, Chris. I mean, look, I think we're all, you know, kind of understanding that over the course of the next month, a little bit more than a month, there's going to be a lot of talk about here about, you know, who might be on the trade block, what you might be willing to give up in order to get better. I mean, obviously there's always going to be some guys that are off the table, but right now with this team, you know, in the position that you're in and a chance to compete for a Stanley Cup, I think most guys are going to be, at least they're going to be willing to listen. They're going to be willing to make a deal if they think it's going to improve the team. I mean, obviously you've got some untouchables on the team. Every team does. But anybody who's not on that list is up for grabs. If you needed that to make the deal.
Well, I guess
I don't think that's what you're looking to do. Hold on one second here, Ryan.
Yep. So I think two things come to mind.
Sure.
You know, since you're going along that narrative, maybe I spent too much time with Theo Epstein, but there is no untradeable player. Never. You're always going to listen. You don't have to make a move, but you're always going to listen. But number two, You're 28-9-12. You're one of the top teams in the league. So I think that you have to be careful about moving pieces off your roster. Most teams that vie for a Stanley Cup don't trade off the roster. You can, but most don't necessarily do that. You can definitely do that. There's no question. The other thing that was brought up, I don't believe that the Bruins don't have trade pieces. That's not accurate at all. First of all, you always have draft picks. And two, you know, you have some guys that are in Providence that I guarantee are drawing some attention from other general managers around the league. You can't tell me Jack Studnicka or Urho Vaakanainen or Trent Frederick doesn't have value to another team around the National Hockey League. So I don't necessarily buy that contention.
I'm just looking at cap friendly, and I don't know much about the cap. I mean, I just on the outskirts, but they have $712 in cap space.
That probably doesn't buy you a whole lot.
I don't think so. I'm just looking at cap friendly right now.
Look, and we were talking
I know
about
that changes if Backus clears waivers because he's still on the.
Doesn't clear as much money as people think. As we were talking about with Ty, that you know you're going to save some money there, but you're not saving $6 million.
We'll see how it changes after you know if he clears waivers, but you have to make certain moves and because of all the injuries that they've had this year and you know all the players that they've had, you know, they've had to really do a lot of juggling, you know, in terms of and they're not alone. There's a number of teams have had to do the same thing, but you know, they've got to do a serious, you know, circus act to bring somebody in, right? I mean, you've got to make a change financially.
So it's dollar in, dollar out.
Yes.
Dollar in, dollar out. Since he was from Chicago, I mean, the Blackhawks right now, as we speak, have cap space $240,000. I'd rather be in the Bruins position than the Blackhawks position at this point with a better team. Granted, you don't have a whole lot of cap space. Cap space is an asset if you're a general manager. But if the Bruins want to bring in a significant player, you might have to consider dollar in, dollar out.
Judd, what was the Bruins' record? 28-9-12. We haven't mentioned the shootout. We've been here for an hour.
I didn't know what the over under was.
Let's go to Mike in Brighton. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I have to agree. Just a quick point on Heinen and Bjork. I've been really impressed with them coming along, and that was my biggest bugaboo about them. Coming into the season, but they've been starting to play like the men they can be, and I think they're going to grow into. We have to remember how young they are, but I agree, it is a fine line. How long do we wait and give them patience? My principal point was going to be about David Backus. I think it's the right move. He doesn't have the speed, and I don't want to see him playing physical. I myself have concussion history, and I see it on him, and I think I fear for him, like one more hit, and he's going to be a terrible father and bad husband and have a sad life. So they say, you know, he needs to not play for the Bruins because that's sort of the only role left for him, and they don't want to see it. That's pretty much what Cassidy was saying in his presser yesterday. But then do we expect him, this two-part question, do we expect him to change that style of play in the AHL if he does? And if so, what does that say about hockey, and where do you guys stand on sort of the ethics of knowing a player is maybe one hit away from having irreparable brain damage, and how do you police that, or do you? I'll hang up and let you guys answer. Thanks, guys. Great show. Love it.
I appreciate the call, Mike.
David Backus is a proud guy, and I don't see him. You know, maybe his game changes a bit, but you know, when it comes to a physical play or comes to protecting a teammate, whether he's here in Boston or whether he's in Providence, I don't know if that changes at all. So I don't know if he plays a different way because of that. It's been well documented. Everybody respects him, you know, through the roof. The respect factor's through the roof. What he's done throughout his
career. His teammates yesterday were effusive.
Exactly. And you don't wish that upon anybody, but how do you I don't think you can police it other than to sit him in the stands. I mean, he's going to go down to Providence and sit in the stands? I don't know. I don't know what their plan is for him. I doubt that. I mean, that would... it's already been, I'm sure it's a hard blow to take for him, you know, and just not ego-wise because he doesn't have an ego, but he's proud. So now you're a few years ago, you were the captain of the St. Louis Blues. You know, now you're playing in Providence. It's, I mean, that's, and last year in the finals, game six, when the finals were, when the Stanley Cup was on the line, David Backus was not in the lineup. That's against his former team, the team he was captain for. Mm. Game seven, he was not in the lineup. I mean, that's got to be really hard to take. And I know he's getting compensated, but still, you know, as proud as he is, it's got to be hard.
Well, that's the tough part about this is, look, it, you know, I think from the health perspective and from the player perspective, I think most of us would look at Backus and say it would probably be time for him to retire, right? It's probably time for him to step away. But
leaving $6 million,
there's a money aspect of it that you don't get paid if you announce your retirement. And so,
but also,
bare minimum, you got to wait for the buyout that's coming this offseason, you would expect.
For David Backus, it'd be like quitting. And I don't think David Backus has quit a thing in his life.
Right.
You know, I don't see that in his personality. And he wants to, you know, so I don't know. I don't know how that works for him. I can't put myself in his head. I don't see that happening.
But one question I did want to address that was brought up. I don't think any coach, knowing that a player is incapable of sustaining a hit, would put that player in jeopardy. I think whether that goes for concussions or anything, if that player is not given the full green light from a doctor, I don't think a team, an organization, a coaching staff would put that player in jeopardy.
But that's injury status then.
Yes.
You know, you're not practicing, you're not doing anything.
No. I mean, just in general, like where the caller brought up, you know,
right.
Ethics of the whole situation. I mean, that's very interesting. You know, and David,
go back to Bergeron when sure. He had the concussion, they would not rush him back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was like his health was number one.
Right. And you can't find a more important player to the team than that. And they still treated him. Absolutely.
I think that they would do the same thing with anybody.
Sidney Crosby, Jonathan Toews, there are a number of guys who went through some serious issues like that. And I think David sought some outside opinions just to make sure in his own mind, forget about the organization, that he wasn't going to put himself into some dire jeopardy if he went back out on the ice.
Look, and we all have those same thoughts about Backus or any player who's got a significant concussion history. But look, the team, the medical staff doing their job does clear him. That's not why he's on waivers, right? That ultimately is not why the decision gets made. It's because he just can't be an effective player at this level at this point. And, you know, is it all tied together? Maybe. Or maybe just age caught up with him, you know, faster than anybody would have hoped.
Age and you know, just miles on his body. I mean, he plays the game a hard way. And you know, he's got to expend a lot of energy to kind of get the motor running, you know. And it's, you know, the game was different when he broke in. The game was different when he was scoring 20 goals a year and, you know, standing in front of the net and banging and dropping the gloves and, you know, that was – and leading, you know. I mean, he's done a lot in this game and he's got a lot to be proud of. But, it was – you know, there were times where you watch him and you kind of felt bad for him. Like he wasn't able to get there and even when he was, there were times, you know, he wasn't able to be effective.
617-779-0985. We'll get to more of your calls coming up as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Shoots and refs flashed off the glove. Take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. And streaming on the Sports Hub app.
.5 the Sports Hub, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We've talked about the fallout from the Tuukka Rask injury against Columbus. We have not really discussed the impact on him. A caller brought it up earlier, guys, that shortly before that injury takes place against Columbus, they announced that Tuukka wasn't going to the All-Star game. Was gonna take the one game penalty.
It,
yeah, he said I'm not going.
So, you know, and we're obviously this is something that gets the attention of the league, and it's something that Ovechkin is, has done before and is doing again this year.
They're fortunate they're a good enough team. You know, they don't, the points, they got a big enough lead. Well, I mean, you know, they're comfortable with him sitting out a game.
Well, so kind of to my point that, all right, so he gets hurt the other night. Obviously, that's not ideal. It's Bruce Cassidy said, don't know the exact timetable, but the expectation is that they're going to ride Halak through the, into the break here, and that hopefully Tuukka's back after the break.
I took it as a positive sign. He looked good, for his night the other night when he was honored for 500 games. He looked good. He said he was pumped up about the gifts, and especially the drum set. Great gift.
Awesome. One of the best I've ever seen.
I give him a lot of credit, yeah. But, I took it as a real positive sign. You know, it was ironic that, or coincidence, ironic, that he was injured right around the same time last year.
Well, it was the
game before the All-Star break when Heal ran him over.
It's not funny. It's just,
it's coincidental, but with a 9-day break coming up for this team, which is, that's on a team that has
a good time for it.
That has some aging players. Yeah. That break is really nice to have that built in. Yeah. But also, you know what? I don't think it's terrible that Tuukka gets a two or 3 week break in the middle of the season to kind of recharge himself.
No, and the only guy going now is Pastrnak and Bruce Cassidy. But Pastrnak and Bruce Cassidy, not a bad thing. They've played more games than just about anybody in the league, or as many as anybody in the league. So they're kind of beyond some of the other teams, and now some teams have their break this week, I believe, right? And then the Bruins' break technically is next week.
It's after the All-Star break.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, they're going to be beyond teams now in games played. So other teams are going to have to catch up to them in games played. So
which is good because
it's all good.
In the past few years,
the opposite.
February and March have been brutal.
March has been brutal the last couple of seasons for them.
I just can't help but laugh because I remember when they first introduced the bye, they had everybody taking it at different times, and you'd come off your bye week and you'd be playing a team.
Against a team
that had been playing,
so when we come, when
a couple
come
of games in the last
Winnipeg,
4 days.
Winnipeg would have been on the bye as well.
Right. That was the thing. Like the first,
every team.
The
was
first
just
couple years,
housed.
It's like
that first game back, playing against a team that it was in rhythm and had been playing. It didn't matter where you were in the standings. That was a scheduled loss.
Let's go to John. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi guys. I think I got the solution to the Bruins as far as their without training anybody on the roster. How about giving San Jose a call and see if they can had Joel Thornton and possibly Evander Kane. Obviously, I know it's money coming in, but maybe they can take on Backus's contract and the Bruins can kind of sweeten the deal a little bit. Maybe like a first, because Evander Kane, if I'm not mistaken, I think he's a fourth overall pick and possibly either a prospect or a draft pick coming for Thornton. I just wonder what you guys think. And I think it would solve a lot of problems on the Bruins roster, give them a lot of options. Thanks, guys.
All right. Appreciate the call, John. Well, this is where we're going to wind up getting into cap trouble here, is you're talking about adding significant money. You've got to take that away, right? And that's where, as you said, Judd, dollar for dollar is what you're going to need to be looking at on trades. It's going to be like an NBA trade where the salaries end up having to match up here. I don't think you're going to trade the equivalent salaries of Joe Thornton and Evander Kane, even if you thought that was the right move. I'm not sure that's going to be palatable for the Bruins at this point.
Yeah, Evander Kane is on a 7-year, $49 million deal. He's in year two of that contract. Joe Thornton, he signed a 1-year, $2 million deal. He'll be unrestricted at season's end.
So I think that's a no. I think that's a no. This is where, again, for the next month plus until the trade deadline, there's going to be a lot of names. There's going to be big names always thrown out there, as there is every year. We go through this every year where you get these, these people who just kind of toss names out there, whether that guy's actually on the trade block or not. And what you wind up with generally in the past, and it has worked for you in the past, is Marcus Johansson. You wind up with a guy who isn't going to blow up every, you know, nobody's going to be running to social media going,
says, who?
Oh, please,
who?
Please get that
and
guy.
And then he has a good play.
But the guy, you know, it's again, you go back to, you know, go back before they won the cup and some of the deals that people looked at then. And, you know, when they bring in Chris Kelly or Rich Peverly or guys like that, and everybody went, what? That's it? That's what you're going to do?
And those guys brought in the year before.
And those guys make huge impacts and wind up winning. You don't win the cup without some of those guys. So those are the deals that we'll be expecting.
Yes. I think around the league, a couple of teams that I'll be fascinated to see what they do who are at the bottom of the pay scale. So these are the three teams going from least on the salary cap scale. Colorado is last in salary cap. They have the most space available. Columbus, New York, the Islanders specifically. Those teams, Joe Sakic, Lou Lamoriello, Jarmo Kekalainen, they should be swinging for the fences. Now, I don't know if Kekalainen has necessarily the prospects to be able to pull a deal off, but the Islanders and the Avalanche do. And those are two teams that will be fascinating to watch as we approach the trade deadline.
All right, we still got another half hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show to come. Billy Jaffe is going to join us coming up on the other side. These guys are going to head out because they've got a flight to Pittsburgh. I mean, it's beautiful this time of year, I've heard. So
love the Steel City.
Definitely going to want to enjoy that. But an afternoon tilt tomorrow, 12:30. You guys are getting started tomorrow, right?
Noon pregame.
Awesome. Love it. So we'll be listening to Judd and Bob tomorrow afternoon. Jaffe joins me coming up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Stick around.
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub, the final half hour here on this week's edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston all by my lonesome now here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Judd and Bob are on their way off to get ready for the flight to Pittsburgh, where the Bruins will take on the Penguins tomorrow, a noon pregame 12:30 face-off here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. But joining me on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline now is Billy Jaffe of Nesson. What's going on, Billy?
You're like an Air Supply song. Remember them from like the 80s? All by myself.
All by myself.
Yeah. There you go. What's up? What's happening?
Oh, just a lot of talk about the physicality of the Bruins, both positively and negatively today.
Yeah, I heard some. Yeah, I get it.
I mean, which is, look, you know, coming off the game on Thursday, we saw what we wanted to see. The game on Tuesday, not so much. So before we get into, you know, kind of around the league, you know, I thought Beersy brought up a good point earlier is that, look, we all get wrapped up in the Bruins and what we see out of this team on a game-by-game basis. Mm-hmm. And after, you know, Tuesday night, it's clear that the team itself questioned its response to what happened. Mm-hmm. But Beersy said, you know, who in the Eastern Conference is tougher than the Bruins? And we all kind of agreed Washington's probably there. Maybe the Islanders, maybe not. You know, Columbus, you're kind of on par with them. Like, you went toe-to-toe with them in the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. Where do the Bruins stand in that regard in your mind if you compare them to what else is out there?
Without ranking, I'll say I couldn't agree more about the Caps. We know that they are physical, they are big, that they're determined. They play with a ton of passion, led by Ovechkin up front. So they're absolutely, no question about it, that top team that they're going to have to compete with physically. I do think the Tampa Bay is getting physical, and I think that their back end is big, It's strong. It's probably going to be harder to get by than, you know, last year they weren't in the playoffs. A couple of years ago they were. And I feel like they've gotten back there. They've got guys like Chernik, and obviously, I mean, McDonough and Hedman are big dudes too. And I feel like up front, their third and fourth lines are, they're playing with a little more jam. So they're a team that I think will bring it. I do agree about the Islanders' sentiment that they, because just the way that they play, I love what Barry Trotz has done there. Tough way to have to win all the time, but they are a physical team in the sense that they're determined. Columbus is interesting because they're playing so physically, so structured right now. You got 8-9 kids up from the American League, RJ, that are doing everything. Like, they are, John Tortorella is basically the Pied Piper right now there, right? Along with everything that they've gone through with losing all these high-profile free agents. And where they had to be and now where they are now, just in, barely in the wild card, but in, amazing stuff. These kids are playing determined. How are they going to be when their others come back? Now, you think it should be a no-brainer. Cam Atkinson comes back. Anderson comes back. They should be great. Well, let's wait and see. Let's see if there's that same structure, that same energy. But they're pretty good. I guess the other team, Carolina, I was going to say, they're a little bit of a conundrum to me. They play with energy, but I wouldn't call them physical. So the Bruins, I would say, are in the second layer, second rung of top physical teams in the East.
There was a time, you know, where in the NHL, clearly something like that happened, whether it was intentional, unintentional, or whatever, that there was going to be serious retribution. We kind of talked in passing this week about the situation with Zach Cassian and Tkachuk and suspension handed out, and Cassian is promising more retribution and all of this stuff. I mean, are those days just dead? Do we just have to get over that as fans and say you're just not going to see that type of response normally in the NHL? And when you do, the league isn't going to look favorably upon it anyway.
They're basically gone. Unfortunately, sorry. Not that I don't want to see, stupid stuff, but a lot of the passion, of the spontaneous combustible passion or fisticuffs, I think are gone. Once in a while, we'll have it. As long as it's two willing combatants, the league's fine. But the problem is it isn't nearly as much of that anymore. And so, yeah, RJ, having an incident like that, I go back to growing up in Chicago, the old stadium. Nobody waited for the replay to see what happened because there wasn't a replay. That's the thing. There was no Jumbotron. There was a scoreboard at the end. It either in the middle of the rink, or in Chicago we had the one in the middle of the arena and then two at the end. Some NHL rinks just didn't even have them in the middle of the arenas. They had them just at the end, right? The two ends. And boy, you waited. I'm going on a tangent here, and you were waiting for scores around the league, and you would look at scores, and they would take 15 minutes to update. Meanwhile, it'd be like 2-2 in a game, and then next thing you know, it'd be like 5-1 or 5-2. All of a sudden something happened. So I digress for a moment, but you didn't wait for the replays. You just reacted, and that's what it was. I don't think we have nearly as much of that now. And as long as, again, if there's two willing combatants, we're okay. But if there's not, if there's one who has to be dragged in, literally, heavily dragged in, RJ, then the league doesn't like that.
All right, let's talk about some of the other things happening in the league this week, including the firing of Gerard Gallant out in Vegas. And Peter DeBoer takes over there.
I got no answer for you there.
Well, I guess my biggest question was, If Peter DeBoer wasn't on the street, does Gerard Gallant get fired? Because they had a guy clearly in mind when they made that decision.
I don't think so. Hard to get a direct answer on that. Kelly McCrimmon, the general manager for Vegas, people still think it's George McPhee, but it's Kelly McCrimmon. Remember, he handed the reins to him, was it last year? Anyway, he mentioned that this wasn't something that just happened instantly, but yet he did have to call Pete DeBoer when he finally made that decision that he was going to do it to make sure that Pete would come over. So he said he hadn't been in touch with him. So it probably doesn't happen if Peter isn't there, but evidently Kelly had been thinking about this, Ryan, for a little while. He said it's a feel thing. It's just something maybe you can't explain unless you do this, unless you go through it. Look, I'm a big Pete DeBoer fan. I happen to think that he's a heck of a coach. I'm his huge Gerard Gallant fan, too. And it's just amazing to me how quickly we are in this cycle right now of coaches, being terminated. It's just, it's interesting. I'm sure it's alarming a bit for some other coaches out there. And it's curious. Now, meanwhile, you've got the worst team in the league in the Detroit Red Wings who have 28 points who haven't done a thing with their coach. And I don't think they will because I think they just know that they're bad and they're nowhere near getting anywhere near being average. Forget good, average right now.
I mean, you mentioned, kind of the churn of this, of the coaching positions around the league. I mean, Gerard Gallant takes an expansion team to the Stanley Cup final a year and a half ago, right? One that Jack Adams made the playoffs last year. We know how that ended up, could have gone a lot better. But then, they're head above water this year. It's not like they're a terrible team.
No, but they think they felt there. Look, about 6-7 days ago, might be off by a day, they were in first place in the Pacific. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is in the Pacific, where I'm looking at the standings right, they have 56 points. The number one team has 57. Point is, there's Calgary, Arizona, Vancouver, Vegas, Edmonton that are all between 57 and 55 points. So if you're watching the standings, as we do, they catapult up the first after an average start, whatever, and then they fall after having a tough week and last week. And I think that was what predicated this move. You know, they lost four games in a row, and they went from first to out of the playoffs. So there's something that Kelly McCrimmon didn't like that had been going on. The team had not sputtered. They had just kind of won one, lost one. Then they picked it up a bit. They changed the chemistry of this team an awful lot. Vegas, that is, RJ, in the offseason. And between last year, the end of last year, and the offseason, bringing in Mark Stone, bringing in Max Pacioretty, bringing in Paul Stastny. There have been others who have talked about this, too. These are guys that have got some great hockey sense, some great hands, but they're not with the same speed capabilities as what Vegas had prior. And so did their team get a little slower? They probably did. Did they get some guys who are capable of scoring? Yeah, but that's a lot of sticks right there to add to a mix that all want the puck on their stick. So anyways, I mean, they're still a good team. Are they a great team? No, because their back end is not great. They need to make a trade for a defenseman. But Gerard Gallant took the fall. Now, what happens with Gerard Gallant is the next question. Detroit could be a landing spot for him because he is so tight with Steve Yzerman. He played in Detroit. He's real good buddies with Steve Yzerman. But does he want to go to a team like that that he knows for a couple of years might be on the rebuild? They could also have a lot of money there, and maybe they make some trades the next year and they build quicker than sooner rather than later.
We've seen, I think I asked you this earlier in the year, but we've seen a lot of coaches get blown out this year. Some that we could see coming, some that like Gallant just kind of pop up. How much do you think that is affected by St. Louis's run last year after they made a coaching change midseason? Do you think that these franchises say, you know what, if we pull the trigger on this early enough, we might be able to turn this thing around and get us, a run deep into the playoffs?
Yeah, I do. I think it has an impact, no question. I don't know if it's the major impact or the major impetus behind all the moves. I do think that, there's a few other things. I mean, first of all, look, let me back up. Yes, it has an impact. How much? Who knows? But I think Kelly McCrimmon is saying, look, he thinks that they have a really good team. He's the one who put it together. If he doesn't think that head coach and his top assistant, Mike Kelly, were getting it done because of the message that they were delivering to the team, he says, look, we can be better. We should be winning this division. It's not a great division. I mean, no disrespect to these guys, but, it's not. It's the worst division, I think, in hockey in the sense that it just doesn't have the overall depth to it. I mean, if you look at it, San Jose, Anaheim, and L.A. are the three worst teams in the West. I mean, California is non-existent in the NHL playoffs this year. So, with that said, that has a big reason to it, right? Now, the other thing, I think there's so much money now involved in making the playoffs, okay? So much money. That these owners, too, we have a new breed of owner in the NHL. And many of these teams, I mean, you look at Arizona, there's a guy, huge money that took over this year. You know, Tampa, about a decade ago, maybe a little less, when Vinick took over, huge amounts of money. So a lot of these contracts now are movable. So like an owner could say, look, I'll eat $2-3 million. Okay, no big deal. They also know that if or when that coach that they're firing gets another job, all summer, all of that contract, RJ, is going to be transferred to his new position, you know, in his new team. So it's almost like they're tradable assets now, too, some of these contracts. So I think that gives them a little sense of kind of security where they're not going to have to pay for it. I don't know how much that would happen in the old days, because teams that were much more run by, you know, budgets and tight budgets, and these weren't, you know, sports teams now, for many, not all, but many owners, are a secondary business, right? And so they treat it differently than they might do some of their other businesses. And so they maybe relax with some of this ancillary money that they've got to pay out.
Well, when you've got, you know, guys, players in the league who are making, you know, $9, $10 million a year, then, you know, if you got to throw an extra few million dollars at a coach, it's not that big of a deal, right?
Well, right. It's not that big. And again, if it's, you know, here's a guy in Vegas and Bill Foley, you know, I don't know if he's a billionaire. I think he is. I think he's a billionaire. I mean, you know, for him, you know, okay, I'm not saying flipping, but what's a couple mil, right? If it's going to make it to the playoffs and we're going to make $10 million, I'm just throwing a number out, I'll more than pay for it right there. And we all know that Gerard Gallant's getting a job anyways, RJ. You know it. If he wants it, he's getting it coming up.
The Tampa Bay Lightning back, you know, a few weeks ago, back about a month ago, were kind of like, what's going on with this team? What, you know, they have definitely found it, and they're only 6 points behind the Bruins in the Atlantic Division with a game in hand right now. How concerned should the rest of the Eastern Conference be that the Lightning seem to have found their game?
I think the league should be concerned, and the league's antenna is up as the mighty Lightning are playing a game that is much more, at least right now, conducive to playing longer in the postseason than what they did before. Last year, they were running away with everything. And, you know, look, let's not chide them for being so damn good last year, right? I mean, it wasn't like they were saying, let's, you know, we're trying to run up scores intentionally, whatever. They were just on fire in the regular season. John Cooper has said it numerous times. They probably won games based just on talent and not so much effort at times that they shouldn't have won. And so they had to get kind of punched in the gut, slapped in the face a bit to recognize that certain things have to change. And, you know, don't forget, there was a couple of weeks ago where Kucherov was benched for a while. They seem to get over that as both a team and as individuals. And Kucherov's still leading them with 54 points in the 47 games that he's played. But it's not like, you know, I mean, he's not obviously on pace for another great season, but he's not lighting it up with 130 points this year. And that's fine. I guarantee you they're all fine with that. And because they're playing more difficult to be playing, it's more difficult to play against. It's more of a structured game. John Cooper's much happier with his team. Vasilevskiy was bad early on. He was barely average early on in the season. And so many people were concerned about the big contract he signed. He seems to have rounded into form and playing real well. They're getting depth, too. Like last night, Anthony Cirelli, a kid that will be up for the Selkie, if not this year, in the next year or two. He had a hat trick. They're getting guys like Connor Verhaeghe. He put up points, too. Points still leading them up front. You know, they've got great depth, but they're playing with a different style now, RJ, and that should be concerning for the entire league.
Let's talk about teams at the other end of the spectrum, because we're closing in on a month to go before the trade deadline. We were talking about it a little bit earlier this morning. You've got some teams that are, you know, were maybe kind of on the edge of making the playoffs that aren't seeing the turn that they hoped. I mean, particularly like a team like Nashville. After they fire Peter Laviolette, they have not gotten much of a bounce out of that. In fact, they've lost a couple in a row. So teams like Nashville, Minnesota, who are, you know, starting to sink a little bit further down that playoff rung, are they going to be more open for business when the trade deadline comes around? And if so, are there players on those teams that might be attractive, not only around the league, but certainly here in Boston?
Well, I do think they are going to be open for business. You know, you bring up two teams in particular that I always use the term, you know, identity crisis. They seem to be, you know, I think Nashville and David Poile thought they had an identity when he brought in, you know, Kyle Turris, brought in, obviously, Matt Duchene in the offseason. I mean, these are going to be brutal deals for them to move. I don't know if they're going to be able to. Ryan Johansson hasn't really come through. I mean, Johansson's got 26 points this year. He's got 9 goals. He's got 9. He's got, 9. Duchene's got 31 points. It's just, he's a minus 5.
Both of those are $8 million a year players.
$8 million. Yeah. I mean, holy smokes. They're going to have to do something there. Pecorine's getting near the end of his run. UC Saros, is he going to be the guy they thought he would be to transition into the starter? So they're going to have to do something there. Minnesota Wild with Billy Guerin. I heard him on an interview the other day, and I've known Billy for years. Who did he learn under most of his executive management career? Jimmy Rutherford, right? Jimmy Rutherford is not afraid to make moves. Billy Guerin's not going to be afraid to make moves. Now, what's he going to be able to do? He's got guys like, Suter and Parise signed for, what, 7, 8 more years, something like that, 7 more years after this. But what's their identity in Minnesota? What did Paul Fenton leave them with? Not a ton. A lot of guys want to talk about Jason Zucker. Would he be able to, he's got a little term left on his deal. He can skate. He can scoot around. He may be attractive. Is a guy like Jordan Greenway attractive? Played college hockey a couple of years at BU. Can you add him and as a nice second, third line type of guy? I don't know. I mean, they're going to have to give up something there, though, because they don't have, as far as I'm concerned, they don't have an identity either. And Billy Guerin's going to have to re-identify what he wants to be known as there. So there might be a few players. I got to imagine that there's no untouchable on the Minnesota Wild right now. None. I mean, I look at the list. Who would be untouchable? I mean, especially, people might say, well, Suter and Parise. No, those guys in particular, if they could move those deals, if they would.
Billy, we'll leave it there. Appreciate the time, as always. We'll talk to you next week during the break.
All right, buddy. Be well.
Sounds good. Billy Jaffe, of course, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. That's going to do it for this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. The Bruins will play tomorrow and on Tuesday. Then they've got a 9-day break. We do not have a break. We will be back here next week for another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We will talk to you then. Stick around for Gasper and Murray next.
Looking for a place to eat that has a little something for everyone? Come to Route 1 Grillhouse in Saugus. The most mouth-watering dishes, such as their ribs, steak tips, seafood, and pizzas. Wash it down with their extensive martini list and large selection of draft beer. Route 1 Grillhouse has a private function room that accommodates up to 70 guests for any function. This is the spot for you and your friends as the weather gets warmer with their outdoor seating. Come on in to the family-owned Route 1 Grillhouse in Saugus, the perfect place to be.